It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
Welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire, doing the show today inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street Studio, looking out on America's Main Street, the one in Concord, New Hampshire. Joining us right now on the program, San Antonio, Texas, is Matt Bonner. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fabulous. Appreciate you joining us for the program. Believe it or not, we're going to talk like entirely about the NCAA tournament during Matt's time here on the program today. We'll do some Red Sox as well as Xander Bogaerts. My conversation with him. Bruins have been on fire, but are dealing with some injury stuff right now, and we'll check in with them down at practice here as we do the show on Monday, and also Semi Ojeleye from the Boston Celtics on the program. But we will start with the NCAA men's basketball tournament. And, you know, we talked last week about, you know, how we were feeling going into the tournament and how we're feeling about college basketball. And, you know, to me, this tournament was kind of a restoration of all the things, or maybe reinforcement is the right word, of all the things that we enjoy and, you know, had come to love about the NCAA tournament, you know, to begin with. The David versus Goliath matchups, the fact that this is kind of the original reality TV with one team in, you know, in extreme joy, one team, you know, crying at the end of the game with the stories, the people we'd never heard of before, the teams and colleges we never heard of before, you know, coming to the forefront. This has been a remarkable NCAA tournament through the first weekend.
It certainly has, and not to toot our own horns, but last week when we were talking about the lead up to it, that's what we said. We said this year the teams are just all over the map. It's literally anyone's tournament, and you've seen that with some of these gargantuan upsets in the first two rounds.
Yeah, and I think we both felt that, and you probably more than me, that Virginia as the number one overall seed was extremely vulnerable. But I don't think either of us expected them to go down the way they did in the first round to UMBC.
Unbelievable.
And that's obviously the story of the tournament, but there have been so many, you know, other amazing stories so far. I mean, there have been amazing games. It's almost, you know, where I'm fascinated by the Loyola Chicago team. Love them. And the 98-year-old sister, and she didn't pick, she had two brackets, and neither one did she pick Loyola Chicago to win the NCAA tournament, which I thought was amazing, because like you have two brackets a lot of the time because you have one where you just do crazy stuff. But for her, it was not in the realm of possibility that they could win the tournament, and maybe probably it isn't anyway. But so many amazing stories.
Yeah, the amount of crazy upsets seems way higher than normal. You look at some of those brackets and you're like, wow, one of these teams is probably going to make the Final Four. It's going to be exciting to watch those stories develop. With UMBC, I read an article last night that came up on my news feed that said, like, going into that first round game, something like 99.something% of the country had never even heard of University
right.
of Maryland, Baltimore country. And after that one game, something like 90, I don't even want to mess the stat up, but like a crazy percentage of all their social media likes activities for the last like 5 years came on that one night. And they valued the amount of free advertising and publicity for the University of Maryland, Baltimore County to be the equivalent of $119 million by them winning that game in the fashion in which they did so. So it's he's saying, you know, it's really the spotlight of not just basketball, but any sport for these 3 weeks.
No, you're so right. And, you know, and that also kind of points out the, you know, we're talking about the financial side of things as well, where we're growing up watching the tournament and, you know, seeing the upsets take place or the great shots, you know, the Christian Laettner shot, obviously, you know, Bryce Drew and Valpo and, you know, all these things that we remember as kids. Like it was different. And, you know, now, like, you see and can tangibly have the numbers in front of you about what the financial aspects mean, which obviously has, you know, changed things, I think, for a lot of people, including, you know, ourselves as we've, you know, gotten older. But when you look out at the, you know, the tournament right now, and you mentioned, you know, the possibility of, you know, one of these teams that is not necessarily, you know, well known at all, making it to the Final Four. Which teams stand out to you the most as having that opportunity?
Well, I hate saying it, you know, and they're not one of those teams, but when I look at Kentucky's bracket, and Kentucky's lined up pretty good to go to the Final Four, and this is a team that went good chunks of the year for the first time in a while, not even being ranked. And then, but it's Kentucky, so it seems like as soon as the regular season ends, that's when they come to life.
Right.
They won the SEC tournament. I think they finished fourth or fifth in the regular season in the conference. And then they go and win the tournament, and now here they are in the Final Four, and due to other upsets in their section of the bracket, if they do their take care of business, they'll be back in the Final Four.
Right.
Which I think is a pretty crazy story.
And that's the we'll stop you there for a sec and just talk a little about the South bracket before we move on. And that's the Loyola Chicago, Nevada, Kansas State bracket, along with Kentucky. And, you know, to have the regional final game hopefully being Loyola Chicago versus Kentucky, I mean, that's going to be one of the most interesting games in a very long time.
I agree. I love those games.
Yeah.
I love the underdog game versus the live games, especially that late in the tournament. There's so much on the line. You know, being here in Texas, I think the fact that Texas A&M and Texas Tech are in the Sweet 16 and looking for a chance to make history is pretty crazy. Neither school ever really considered to be a basketball school.
Mm-hmm.
And hasn't really done much in the NCAA tournament in a long time. And they're both looking to make deep runs. Other than that, honestly, my bracket is so messed up at this point. I don't want to say it's embarrassing, but it's. I think a lot of people are in the same boat.
Yeah, like you have. If you look at the Davids. A lot of them that are left, like teams like you mentioned, like Texas Tech and, you know, Texas A&M, are schools that are huge schools that everybody knows, but not for basketball. Like, really, the only real Cinderella left at this point, I would say, is Loyola Chicago. I mean, Syracuse has a good narrative because nobody wanted them in the tournament, and they won. So obviously, they have that going for them, and. There's so many teams that you just didn't expect to be at this point that have pulled things off, and not necessarily small schools, but teams that aren't, you know, really well known for basketball.
Yeah, Florida State. It's almost like all the football schools.
Yeah,
it feels like
Clemson,
Florida State, Kansas State. Yeah, I don't know. The Michigan team's hard not to root for after the way they won too.
That game was. Stack the best finish of the tournament so far. That one, without question, there, victory. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. We talked about the South, the West, a little bit of an overview there. The NCAA tournament comes to Boston. I'll be down there to cover that, and we'll hear from a lot of participants as well coming up on next week's show. We'll look at the East bracket and Midwest as well, and we'll get Matt's favorites at this point in time. To make it to the Final Four in return. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire, where this segment of the show is brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. We encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at nhlawoffice.com. So there's a lot going on with Boston sports. I don't think there's any question about that. A lot of excitement in regards to what the Boston Bruins are doing, although they're still kind of flying under the radar. The Celtics headed to the postseason. The Red Sox getting started. And we're going to start with the Bruins, who, as I've mentioned before, are kind of flying under the radar, both on this show and in terms of what's going on, you know, in the Boston sports scene, and they deserve your full attention. This is a special team, similar to, you know, what the Celtics are doing. Right now, they are 4 points behind the Tampa Bay Lightning, not just for the most points in the Atlantic Division, but for the most points in the Eastern Conference, and they have two games in hand. They beat Tampa 3-0 in Tampa, despite the Bruins playing shorthanded in that contest. No Patrice Bergeron, no David Backes, no Zdeno Chara, no Charlie McAvoy, no Jake DeBrusk in that contest. Good news on Bergeron. He skated Monday, and he is looking to return to the lineup soon.
It was nice to be back on the ice and skating, and felt good. You know, it's been a long, you know, 3 weeks, but still, you know, it was nice to finally, I guess, move forward and be on the ice, and definitely was nice to stay and be with the guys this morning.
So when the Bruins made their trade deadline acquisitions, Rick Nash, Nick Holden, and Brian Gionta joining the fold, the question was, you know, did the Bruins need these guys? Did they need this influx of veteran leadership on this hockey club? And the answer has obviously been yes, as they've dealt with the injuries that we mentioned before. They've been needed in terms of their leadership and also filling out the lineup. Nick Holden has been very impressive for the Bruins, taking on more responsibility with Zdeno Chara out of the lineup. An opportunity to talk with Nick at Bruins practice, and here's this extended conversation.
So just talk about what this has been like for you coming in with the Bruins, and kind of how this has met your expectations for what the situation was going to be.
I think any time that you get moved and coming into a new team, obviously, you know, from playing them and seeing in the standings that they were playing well, and the team obviously was doing well this year. And so my expectation was to kind of just come and try and add what I can bring to a team into here and make sure it was a positive impact, not anything negative.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to, because when the trades happened and Gio came in and everything, like, the Bruins had a really good thing going. And now all of a sudden, you know, there's extra defensemen, there's more forwards. Mm-hmm. And obviously the injuries have worked their way out, but also, you know, big personalities, good personalities, but big ones. How has that all gelled, and has the injuries kind of helped that process?
Yeah, I mean, I think the team did a great job really kind of accepting the guys that came in here. When I got in here, I got to kind of go out and meet the team right away. Mm-hmm. Up in Toronto in a more social setting. And so you could tell right away that there weren't anybody kind of looking at us as outsiders. Mm-hmm. It was like immediately they were looking at us as accepting us and get right into the team atmosphere. So obviously playing-wise, it helps when you can come in and start playing. And like you said, we had extra D, but the game of hockey is pretty wild how it works, and so now we're down to 60, and so we're really already relying on our depth, and obviously you want those Z and McAvoy back because they're obviously big parts of this team, and then we'll see where it goes from there. And I think just the attitude that everybody has in this room is what's the best part about it, because nobody's really like holding a grudge or anything like that. If somebody's playing, they're excited that that guy's getting an opportunity.
Do you feel like Rick Nash and yourself have been able to, you know, be yourselves in terms of your personality and the energy and the excitement that you bring to the game? And was that a concern coming in, where you're like, okay, I'm coming into a new situation that's going well, can I, you know, be myself in all the different ways that you are, whether it's in the room or on the ice?
Yeah, no, I think kind of the all the guys they brought in were a little bit older, right? And so I think it's easier for us to be a little more comfortable right away, because obviously you've been around the game, you've been around other teams quite a bit. So Like I said, the way the guys here kind of accepted us as fast as they did and pushed us right into kind of how this team is has probably helped that. But it's been easy to kind of come in and just be yourself. And like I said, I think the biggest thing for us coming in here, we all wanted to make a positive impact. And I think so far we've been able to do that.
What's been your analysis as to why the team works so well? There's the mixture, as you mentioned. It's more of a veteran team than a young team, but you have obviously, you know, the younger players on this team who make significant contributions. Why, in your view, has this worked so well for the Bruins this year?
Yeah, I think it's obviously a combination of coaching and the guys' mentality in this room. I was talking to some of the guys after the game in Tampa. From the Lightning, and they just said, they're like, you guys have really a team, man, and you guys are just relentless. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't stop on puck, like, don't stop. Mm-hmm. You never give up on anything. And so that's kind of the biggest thing I've seen is that whether it's the back check, everyone's committed to every detail in our game, whether it's back checking and blocking shots and all that stuff. And to win in this league consistently, you need those good small details, and now, that's something we do really well.
Was that Tampa game in some ways eye-opening to you about the potential of this group, given, you know, what happened in Florida previous, given the injury situation? And Tampa is a really good team, and you were relentless early on in establishing the lead and then remained relentless throughout the course.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you could just tell going into that game the focus that we had as a team. It was really a kind of a playoff atmosphere type of game where the two top teams trying to go at it. So obviously I think we caught some bounces that went our way, and that helped us out on the power play and stuff like that. But again, it's just the small details that when you get away from that, that's when little breaks don't go your way. Mm-hmm. When you're playing the game the right way and making sure you're doing every little thing the right way, usually you get your breaks. And so I felt like that was one of the biggest things in that game was just, like I said, we were just doing everything the right way. We weren't cheating the game at all. We were underneath pucks. We were playing good defense, coming from inside out on everything, and just playing fast. And so obviously against a team like that, if you're not playing like that, they can make you pay real fast.
How does Z not being here and the situation with McAvoy as well and his injury, how does that benefit you outside of the obvious of getting, you know, more playing time and so forth? Do you get more acclimated to the team based upon the additional responsibilities that come with those guys being out?
I don't know if I get more acclimated because I don't think anybody's really changed their game.
Right.
I don't think anybody needs to ever change their game when they're offered more responsibility or whatever. You just obviously accept the more play, like you said, more playing time or maybe a different role on the ice. But I mean, in the room and stuff, it's not like I'm talking more because they're not in the room talking. I'm still talking the same amount that I would have before. Right. And I think again that just speaks to the team how deep character wise in the room. It's like you lose two huge pieces on your decor, and we've still been able to play some pretty good hockey, and obviously moving forward, we're going to continue to do that.
In concluding, obviously from covering the Bruins, the fans watching Z and Bergeron and Marchand, like there's kind of a feeling about who they are. But I'm interested from your perspective as somebody who's coming in from the outside, like what you thought about those guys before and what you think about them, you know, now that you're around them every day.
Yeah, I mean, obviously playing against them, they're just so we'll talk about Bergie. Yeah. Like, he's just so dangerous. He got a quick one-timer from the slot all the time. He's like your prototypical play the right way.
Right.
Yeah. He is defensively, he's always in the right spot, making sure that he's, like I said, doing those small details. And you see it kind of on and off the ice. Now that I'm here, you see him is just a professional to everything he does. And so not that I wouldn't expect that, but you see it when you're around it. And then Z is just consistency. Like, they're both just, that's exactly what being, I think what being a good professional is in this game is just being able to do everything consistently. And so the work they put in is unbelievable Z, I don't think I've ever seen somebody say lift weights as much as him and kind of work as hard as he does. And for obviously his age, I think that's something that's helped him stay at the top for so long.
And the most interesting of the three, Marshy. You played against him for
it's
years.
Hilarious, yeah. Because, I mean, you know he's a good player when you're playing against him. You hate him because he's a little. And when you're with him, you love that he's on your team because, obviously, he's such a dynamic guy where he can score with everyone in this league, but he's also got that little edge to him that drives the other team crazy.
Nick, thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
Didn't see that coming there. We had to censor Nick a little bit. That's rare here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. But he was referring to Brad Marchand being a feisty guy, and I think that's as far as we're going to take it. The Boston Celtics have also been dealing with injuries, and that's been noted. Kyrie Irving has been out of the lineup. Al Horford missed a couple of games. Jaylen Brown remains out with the concussion protocol. Daniel Tice out for the season, knee. It looks like Marcus Smart's going to be out until at least early May with that thumb injury that he had surgery on, the right thumb. So with injury comes opportunity, and Semi Ojeleye has been good this year. He's really obviously needs to establish more of an offensive game, be a more consistent three-point shooter. But defensively, he's added a lot, and the rookie from SMU talked with me about how this opportunity is an important one for him here at the end of the season with Tice in particular out of the lineup.
Just what are your takeaways from your first season? What are the biggest things that you've learned about the league and about yourself?
Just some mental grind, I guess. I think the hardest part is just getting yourself to that right mental space every night. I mean, for a young guy, it's a lot longer than what we've experienced before. So, you know, staying sharp every day consistently is the toughest part.
Is it that the mental side of, you know, not knowing exactly what your role is going to be? Right. And in the past, you kind of knew exactly what you were going to do. Right. And now you have to be ready for just about, you know, anything at any given moment.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I mean, I think that's part of being a professional is just being able to do whatever, you know, you need to do when called upon. So I think coach does a good job of trying to make sure guys know that, hey, you know, I might go to you late, I might go to you here mm-hmm. or there, so just stay ready. And when he says that, he means that. So, I mean, I think it's good that you know that there is, you know, opportunities, you know, everywhere. So it helps you to stay sharp.
What have you learned about yourself on the court and what you can do in this league and how you can build off of the base that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think I can defend a lot of positions and try to, you know, make plays on that end of the floor. And offensively, I just need to, you know, learn where my spots are and how to play with guys with a lot of talent like we have on this team.
When you look at this particular situation right now with all the injuries going on, obviously there's going to be opportunity for yourself. How do you embrace that opportunity and make the most of it?
Just go out there and play basketball, you know, do the same thing you've been doing your whole life and just, you know, not approach it any differently, but just know that, you know, you go out there and, you know, kind of give it your all. I mean, I think everybody's role is going to change a little bit because guys are out, so we're going to be out there a lot more, like you said. But I think everybody knows their strength, and you're going to try to play to them.
Finally, is it kind of stunning, you know, when you know, look at what's happened to this roster? And obviously it's a short period of time, and guys are going to start coming back. Some guys won't be coming back. But, you know, is there – what is the feeling like in the locker room when you see all these different guys go down?
It's tough. You know, you don't want to see guys not being able to play because of injury and – you know, we're going to miss those guys on the court, you know, Tice, obviously, and, you know, Smart's out, JB got hurt, you know, a lot of guys got injured recently, and hopefully, you know, we'll get a lot of those guys back quickly. But I think, you know, ever since Gordon went out, everybody knew they had to step up, you know, every night. So I think we have a tough team.
All right, Semi Ojeleye right there. You're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. We'll head down to spring training as we get ready for the Red Sox opening day on March the 29th. They're in Tampa against the Rays. And one of the big keys to the Red Sox this year is a bounce-back season from Xander Bogaerts. Bogey was injured for a large portion of last year, a wrist injury to his left wrist, which created issues with him generating any sort of power and driving the baseball. Here's my conversation with Xander Bogaerts on the 2018 Boston Red Sox.
So is there any difference in how things feel this year coming into spring training, coming into the regular season with little bit of a new group, new manager, new coaching staff. Is there anything different in how things feel?
A little more free. Always, I think a fresh start is always can help a lot of people, you know. This is a new year, new people coming in, new coaching staff, pretty much completely new coaching staff. Some of the guys I coached me in minor leagues, Goodwin, our first base coach, coached me in minor league. So Carlos Fabres, third base coach. So for me, it's still pretty familiarity with some of the coaches and some of the new guys.
When you look at the lineup and the depth of this team, I mean, how do you see that affecting you personally, particularly in regards to, you know, J.D. Martinez coming in? There's been a lot of discussion about what that's going to mean in terms of increasing production and productivity up and down the lineup. Do you think it has any effect?
Obviously it's a hell of a player we got right there. Guy with a pretty good track record lately. He's been doing it for a couple of years now, and you insert him into our lineup from last year, I mean, it's a huge boost to win. So hopefully we're looking forward to another successful season. He's just hopefully going to make everyone better.
But for you, coming off of last year, when we talked a lot about, you know, the injuries that you dealt with throughout the course of the year, and it seemed like your production, you felt good both in the field and at the plate at the end of last year. Just kind of when you look at last season, are you building upon what happened, you know, at the end of last year, or just kind of pushing it to the backdrop and, again, starting anew?
Last year, to compare to this year, I'm swinging pain-free. No issues at all with my hands. I mean, the aggressiveness is back there with my swings. The power in my swings is back there. I didn't have any of those stuff after I got hit. I'm just going to be the same player. You know, I was a pretty good player right before I got hit, and right after I got hit until I got good back, I started playing back to my regular. So, I mean, I'm just looking forward to having another good year.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've seen, you know, down here the last couple of days, is that your swing is back, whether it's watching MVP or in the game against Port Charlotte on Tuesday when you hit the home run. Yeah. What does that feel like, you know, for you to be able to know that, okay, I have everything there for me again when you were just fighting it last year?
I mean, last year, the only thing I probably could have done was hit base hits. Even that was hard to do. I mean, swinging was hard. I didn't have a lot of problem throwing. It wouldn't molest me that much throwing, but just getting the bat through the zone would hurt, and I mean, I played through it, and I don't feel any of that this year. Thank God. I mean, it's been pretty healthy so far, and I feel pretty normal again.
When you look at Mookie, Jackie, the outfield, and Andrew Benintendi, you know, does it feel like that young core has taken on more of a leadership role as kind of things have changed as well? Because you're one of the kind of the glue guys of this team. Like, you keep everybody loose.
Yeah.
You're talking to everybody. Do you feel, you know, more comfortable being you than you have in the past?
Yeah, because we have a lot of younger guys on the team. Right. Back when I came up, we had a lot of veterans, man, a lot of accomplished guys, you know, and now there's a lot of young guys. We got a lot of good prospects coming up. So hopefully it's going to be a young team going forward, you know, and we got to keep them intact, keep them doing the right thing and just showing them the way. And once they get old like us, they'll do the same to the younger guys.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, the clubhouse last year and how that, you know, there were some things that you didn't necessarily think were helpful with the team moving forward. Now, does it feel like it's in some ways your clubhouse more than perhaps, or you have that kind of onus to step up and make it your clubhouse?
It's a whole different vibe right now. Last year is last year. This year we got new coaching staff, new manager, so everything is fresh. Just as if you got called up to the big leagues, you know, it's a whole new environment. Everything is brand new to you, and that's kind of how it feels right now. You know, everyone's excited, everyone's looking forward to this year, and there's just a lot of positive energy going on right now.
For you, in regards to goal setting, do you set, you know, goals of I want to make the All-Star game or do certain things within the course of the game, or do you try to keep it to things that are, you know, controllable that you can do, or just keep it even simpler than that?
Healthy, man. I've had good seasons while I'm healthy, and if I can just do that again, and I mean, I'll definitely be productive again, and hopefully I don't get any of those weird injuries. And because, I mean, that's one of the toughest parts in this game, and that's how I had to learn last year.
Alex Cora has set the goal of winning the World Series as being the goal, and he has stated that very clearly. What does that mean to the players, where obviously your goal is that as well and always has been that, but to have it as that clearly stated and to have that as the focal point throughout the course of the year, does that change anything?
I mean, this is a vision, you know. We want to be up receiving a trophy at the end of the season. In late November, early November, we want to be the last team standing, and he's preaching that from day one, and we obviously all are envisioning that, and we have the team to do it, you know. It's just up to us now, players, to do it as a team, and we've been good these past 2 years. Just got to try to clinch again and reach more further.
Final thing, you've obviously been on a team that won the World Series back 2013, and you've been on teams now that have obviously not won the World Series. And this team is trying to maximize, even here in spring training, its October potential, whether it's, you know, what they're doing with the pitchers and Chris Sale and so forth. What has been different about the way that this team has performed the last couple of years in the postseason versus what you did in 13? And is there any variables to change it other than, you know, just circumstances?
I mean, all the teams are getting better. Yeah. No team is trying to go backwards. If you ask me, our 2016 team was definitely better than the World Series team we had on paper. And we didn't make it past the first round. Got to give Cleveland credit. They went until the finals. So the competition is hard, man. And, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. But 2013 was special, man. I mean, there's a lot of veteran guys. As soon as something goes south, they make sure to get it straight back. And it was a special, man. I remember all those guys helping me out. I mean, I was so young, you know. And it was a special year. But on paper, these past few years, we're definitely right up there or even better than that team. But that team was just meant to be real special.
Xander Bogaerts right there. Quickly now, Christian Vasquez, Red Sox starting catcher, on his outlook for 2018.
For you, talk about coming into this season for you, your expectations, how you're feeling, you know, coming into things in spring this year as compared to previous years.
Feel good. Do the same thing last year, you know, keep consistent and, you know, play good defense like always, and, you know, is, you know, try to get many W's we can.
When you look at the offensive side of the game for you last year, you talked about how you compacted the swing, took out the leg kick. Do you see a continuation of that this year? Or are you looking to put any variables into the swing, or are you just looking to kind of repeat what you did last year and found successful?
Yeah, do the same thing, you know, be consistent, like I said, and, you know, try to help the team.
In regards to, you know, the pitching staff coming in this year with David Price back into the rotation, what's your excitement level for the type of rotation this team's going to have, putting a quality pitcher out there on a day in, day out basis?
Yeah, I think we got one of the great pitching staff starters, and, you know, we feel very comfortable with, you know, with the staff, and, you know, they're gonna, you know, they like to compete and do, you know, try to help the team to win.
You're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. That segment of the show brought to you by Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. In return, more on the NCAA tournament with Matt, including the tournament coming to Boston. What to expect there as the Sweet 16 is in Beantown.
Welcome back. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. This segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. So as we go through the NCAA men's basketball tournament, I'm curious as to which teams you see now as having the best paths to the Final Four. You mentioned one in Kentucky previous, as the South bracket has been, you know, completely blown up. The West bracket has been blown up because of obviously Xavier's loss. And also North Carolina's loss as well. So let's look at the West, then we'll do the East and the Midwest. It doesn't seem like, obviously, there is a clear favorite at this point in time in the West.
I agree. You know, despite that, I know Michigan's the 3 seed, but for some reason I feel like Gonzaga is the team to beat in that bracket. Well, they've been great pretty much all year. I feel like they should have had a higher seed given their record, and then they won their conference tournament. But I'm going to go with Gonzaga out of the West.
I would too. It's not clear. There's no clear favorite, but if I was going to pick, I would say Gonzaga. The East, unfortunately for me, is because I was hoping we'd have a Cinderella team coming in, because that's always fun when you have, you know, the big schools like Purdue, Villanova, you know, West Virginia, teams that you kind of expect to be in the Sweet 16. Texas Tech obviously is a little bit of a variable there, but I was hoping that you'd see, you know, a team that is like a Loyola Chicago make it to the East, but you can't always get what you want. That bracket's obviously the one that's the most intact at this point in time. Villanova has looked very good. I had them as favorite to win going into the tournament and winning the national championship, and I would say that I'm really not, you know, moved all that much in regards to that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought West Virginia was underseeded. They were ranked pretty high all season. Texas Tech, like you said, one of those teams where no one's used to seeing them that high, a three seed and advancing to the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people watch Texas Tech games throughout the year as well. Purdue, their best player is injured, so I'm curious how that's going to affect if you can even play in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
So, and Villanova was basically number one or two the entire season. So I think it's Villanova's bracket to lose at this point.
I agree with that. And 2009, when Villanova was seeded in Boston, which has absolutely – I'm doing what I hate. Like, when people say, well, in 2009, Villanova was in Boston, they made it all – they won the bracket that year, which has absolutely nothing to do with this year. But, they did go through Boston in the last time that they were there in getting to the national championship game. Midwest right now is also pretty interesting. You have Kansas still around, and you have Clemson, who's been the most dominant team so far in the tournament, but they haven't really necessarily – well, Auburn's a good team, but was struggling coming into that game. I am going to go out on a limb here, and I'll go with Clemson because the way they're playing right now, which is not my original pick to come out of the Midwest, but I like the way Clemson's playing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna go with Duke. I don't. Kansas, I didn't watch them a ton this year, so I wasn't 100% sure, and they've kind of not looked great their first two rounds, and kind of like you with Villanova in 2009. I don't think that has anything to do with anything.
Right.
I think every game is independent of itself.
Exactly.
It's hard to based on how a team dominated or struggled in the previous round. But I just feel like Duke has the best team. They obviously have a ton of tournament experience. They're playing Syracuse in the first round, who I think they're going to beat. They're used to that zone. They've seen them. They're both in the ACC. And then, you know, you're going with Clemson. I think Clemson does have a chance to upset Kansas. And if that's the case, again, I just think Duke's a better team over Clemson. They're used to seeing them in the ACC, and they'll get by them.
Yeah, I had Duke going to the Final Four, and Clemson, I think, is going to knock off Kansas. And I've just been impressed with the way Clemson has played and been dominant. It gets back to the conference thing again, where we talked about, you know, where is the SEC at versus the ACC, and how have the teams done the tournament, doing kind of a comparative analysis. But I don't know. I have a different feeling about that Clemson Duke game than I did when I filled out the bracket. But we'll see. And again, I think that the only there's not really any, what's made the tournament so good is there's not really any constants throughout the course of this, where you can be incredibly confident about a team. I'm pretty confident about Villanova going to the Final Four. I'm pretty confident about, actually more than pretty confident about, Kentucky going to the Final Four at this point. And you know, to me, the Midwest and West are just complete toss-ups at this point. I want to ask you, as we wrap things up here in the Life of Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics, this segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center. Have there been any, you know, players that you're watching from the NBA perspective that during the course of the first couple games in the NCAA tournament have stood out and not, you know, necessarily improved their stock in regards to
you know, the draft, but because obviously there's a lot of things that go into that, but have kind of opened your eyes?
There's that kid on Texas, Mo Bamba.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know Texas ended up losing that game and he fouled out. I watched that game. It was a great game in overtime. And his fifth foul, I mean, he was literally just put his hands up straight and the refs got, you know, called a foul. But his length and size, oh my goodness. I look at him on an NBA level. You know, he's got the physical specs to be a really great player if he keeps working on his skill set and developing in that regard. I don't know, a couple of those guys, big guys on Purdue, like just, you know, their size. The one guy that broke his elbow.
Yeah.
The thing with Purdue was like that guy, I didn't really watch him much. I didn't really watch much of college basketball at all during the regular season.
Neither did I.
But with Purdue, in that first round game when their star center broke his elbow, I'm like, oh, well, that's really going to hurt him. You know, that they relied on him to anchor the defense all season. He's 7 feet. He's mobile. He's a guy that protects the rim and lets those guards go out and pressure and not have to worry about giving up layups. And then the same thing on the offensive end. He gets an extra possessions. His offensive rebounds, you can throw it to him in the block and iso him if you need a bucket and run the offense through him. So when he went down, I'm like, wow, this is really going to mess Purdue up moving forward. But I watched the second round game, and it seemed like they had even more huge guys to bring off the bench in his place that hardly missed a beat. So I'm not sure what they're drinking in that part of Indiana. Or I don't even know if they're from Indiana, but the size on that team is pretty impressive for sure.
In concluding, I mean, how much do you gain from, you know, seeing a guy in tournament action in terms of analyzing what they're going to be as a pro? We'll take Jason Tatum as an example, where, you know, Duke obviously didn't have a great tournament last year, but you could see the makings of a guy who is going to be a really good NBA player, and just kind of you know, figuring out how that was going to work out, how good he was going to be. You couldn't really see that. You know, when you watch tournament action, I think for me, a lot of the time, because I'm more of a, and you are obviously more into, you know, the pro game at this point, it's kind of, it's also, you know, looking and seeing what guys could potentially do what, you know, in the NBA, or trying to find guys that, you know, kind of below the radar. I remember I forget who the kid was in Wisconsin that I liked. He was a really good defensive player. And could shoot the three a little bit. He was a point guard and whatever. I forget what his name was. But, like, in you know, Scotty Reynolds, as an example, too, of Villanova in 2009, where you're like, well, this guy just, he has a command for the game, big moments. But all the other things, the size, the speed, and the NBA game is so different.
Honestly, it's a really small sample size compared to all the college games most guys have played. I mean, you got to think, if you know, even if you're a sophomore, you've already played 60, 70 games, and the NCAA tournament is 1, 2, 3. If you get to the Final Four, 4 games, it's a pretty small sample size. I don't think it's fair to judge a guy's, you know, body of work based on just what he does or doesn't do in the NCAA tournament. To me, the biggest thing you can see is freshmen. You know, freshmen usually come of age in the NCAA tournament. By the time you hit the NCAA tournament, freshmen have typically played enough minutes, enough games, where now they're not really freshmen anymore. They get it. And you can kind of see what kind of player they're really going to be. And that's where I think you get the most value trying to judge a guy's potential or talent. But outside of that, to me, it's just a couple more games out of a huge sample size.
Matt, as always, appreciate you joining us for the program. Look forward to talking to you next week to recap another hopefully great weekend of college basketball.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show presented by the Prescription Center.